You're listening to ReachMD XM160, the channel for medical professionals. Welcome to Perspectives in Palliative Medicine, produced in cooperation with AAHPM, the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine. Your host is Dr. Porter Story, Executive Vice President of the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, and sponsored by King Pharmaceuticals Incorporated, a leader in pain management.
Appropriate use, under medication, abuse. What are the signs a physician needs to look for when assessing a patient in pain and considering opioid analgesics? Joining us today to discuss the appropriate use of opioids is Dr. Martha Twaddle. Dr. Twaddle is the Chief Medical Officer of Midwest Palliative and Hospice Care Center and Associate Professor of Medicine at Rush University School of Medicine. Welcome to ReachMD, Dr. Twaddle.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Porter.
Well, there's so much in the media these days about prescribed narcotics, addiction, overdoses. How should a physician assess a patient in pain so as to minimize these risks?
It is a tough environment to practice, I think, especially now. I think physicians feel the compassion and the desire to help folks and yet have a sense of caution that may in some places be even a bit overblown, that they are reluctant to prescribe adequate analgesia to patients for fear that the patient will become addicted or misuse the medication. You know, I think it starts first, Porter, with really a thorough assessment of what the patient means by pain. I do think because we tend to be a culture that emphasizes medicine as the intervention, that a good assessment sometimes reveals that pain isn't just physical and that other modalities would be of benefit and should be introduced even before we start with pills. Likewise, even as we introduce pain medication and opioids in particular, we always have to be thinking of it as a three-legged stool. A three-legged stool, and by that I don't mean constipation. A three-legged stool meaning that one leg of this will be the medication that supports the patient. The other will be the physical medicine rehabilitative work that helps patients recover, helps them learn how to adjust and compensate for conditions that lead to the pain, helps them to rehabilitate. If the meds are successful in treating their pain, some patients overextend and re-injure.
And we see that a lot.
Yeah, so that's really key. And the third piece is the psychology. And any one of those that's inadequately or overemphasized that does not create balance. So I think that's really key, is the good assessment of what pain is this total pain, what are the components of pain?
What do you mean by total pain?
Total pain is what Saunders has taught us about, that pain is not just a physical symptom, that it has social aspects, spiritual aspects, existential aspects, and all those pieces of pain must be looked at. You know, for example, a person who experiences a severe back injury and is left with persistent back pain. The pain may be magnified by the fact that they can no longer work and provide for their family. Or sometimes pain comes because of a stupid accident that we've had, and the pain may be aggravated because or amplified because of our remorse and sense of guilt that we led to our own injury. And unless those aspects of the pain are teased out and addressed, we can't really get good control over the symptom.
Well, it sounds like you spend quite a bit of time doing a good history and a good physical exam. How do you go about choosing an opioid for a particular situation?
I think that the best approach is always to tailor any medication to the patient as opposed to the disease or the syndrome. There is a tendency for folks to have in their gun belt certain bullets that they apply to any pain syndrome. For example, good old hydrocodone and acetaminophen in combination. It's an easy pill to prescribe, and it doesn't require a lot of hassle. It can be even phoned in. So a lot of physicians will automatically go to a hydrocodone or codeine-based medication. But in front of them, let's say they have a 85-year-old with severe crippling osteoarthritis and horrific pain, persistent pain, and her mobility is already compromised, and they're going to add one of the most constipating drugs available. So is that the best drug? Probably not. It goes back to what you said, Porter, doing a really thorough history and understanding the complete review of systems. Is constipation an issue? Is nausea an issue? Likewise, when we get into the pain meds that are long-acting, that's when I think we really have to think about who is the patient who will be taking this medication. For example, I have a patient who tends to be very right brain, I would say. He's not real organized as far as his medications. He often misses a dose. He tends to forget what time it is and go long before he takes his next medication. So when I'm thinking about prescribing for him, I want a medication on board that, number one, will have a gradual decrease in its level as opposed to abrupt. So I'm going to choose maybe a long-acting morphine, maybe a methadone, as opposed to a long-acting oxycodone. Long-acting oxycodone is water-soluble. When that medicine is finished, it's finished. And that patient would plummet, so to speak, back into full-blown pain. Or I might even consider a transdermal modality of pain delivery because of his inability to really watch the clock.
Sounds like one of the most common misuses you run into is an unwillingness to take enough of the medicine you've prescribed.
That is very true. I think patients are probably as worried, if not more so, than their physician that they're going to become addicted. And you know that a lot of this stems from a misunderstanding of what addiction is. Often we can start those conversations with patients by saying, you know, if you weren't in pain, would you take this medicine? And they, absolutely not. I think that immediately helps them understand that they're taking this medicine for a reason, and addiction is when we take the medicine for a reason other than the symptom that we're treating. That keeps them oftentimes from dosing themselves appropriately, and we see that a lot, a reluctance to take adequate analgesia to really restore them to full function.
I couldn't agree more. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Perspectives in Palliative Medicine on ReachMD Radio, XM160, the channel for medical professionals. I'm your host, Dr. Porter Story, and joining me to discuss the appropriate use of opioid analgesics is Dr. Martha Twaddle. Now, suppose you run into somebody who really does misuse opioids or shows signs of addiction. What do you do?
You know, Porter, I think what we see the most, rather than addiction, is substance misuse. And I do separate those two. Substance misuse, defined as using the opioid for reasons other than what it was intended. So the patient who takes just a little bit more because it helps them relax, or takes a little bit more because they want to fall asleep in the middle of the day because they don't want to deal with the other things that are confronting them. And that's substance misuse. So, again, going back to that idea of the three-legged stool, the psychology, the support for that patient definitely needs to be ramped up, finding better coping mechanisms than just medicating the symptoms of anxiety or insomnia, and picking, if necessary, a different med to augment the opioid that's more targeted towards those symptoms. The other piece is re-education, and sometimes patients do this without really realizing it's not the right thing to do. Oh, that med works. If I take a little more, I get even more relief. And they need to talk it through with their physician and better understand this med is for this problem, and I need to look at other things to treat my anxiety.
What else do you monitor a patient who's getting strong pain medicines for?
What we really want to look for are the outcomes. So even as we sit down with patients and we're talking about using this modality for the treatment of their symptom, we have to be talking about what we hope to see them achieve because we're using this intervention. Good pain management means that ideally our functional status will be enhanced, that we will be able to do more, to live more fully, to work again, to really be an active member of society and particularly of our families and do the things that we love to do. And if we're not achieving those goals, then we have to question whether our course of treatment is really the right treatment. And if, God forbid, we're actually interfering with the achievement of those goals through the prescription of opioid therapy, then it's not the right therapy.
I bet you've run into people who have had difficulty with alcohol, tobacco, cocaine, other prescribed medicines, and are quite fearful of taking strong pain medicine.
That's absolutely true. I have several patients who have been recovered addicts that I see who then have a pain syndrome that necessitates opioids, and it does require a great deal of negotiation. It's interesting, their pushback against wanting to use that med, even though they understand that it could help them, can be extremely intense.
Mm.
And we have to set some clear parameters. They will feel oftentimes more comfortable if I limit the number of tablets that I give them, if I see them more frequently during that time of treatment. I often say, well, bring someone to the appointment with you so that we can create a safety net around you so that myself and someone who's very close to you can monitor you for any behaviors that would infer that you are losing your recovery status.
That's an interesting way to frame it. Are there some pain medicines that you feel more comfortable with using in a difficult patient like this?
Well, I think that medications that are longer acting and that require less dosing are often better received. So, for example, in a patient, let's say, who had a significant substance abuse history of pain medication, who now has a pretty significant pain issue, I might choose something like transdermal fentanyl, because that would avoid, I take the pill, I feel better phenomena that could then ramp up into a substance misuse and abuse scenario.
I bet you've seen some patients where these opioids were rehabilitative and life-giving, too.
You know, I still see a gentleman, and he comes from Arizona to visit me still, because he says, I gave him his life back, was his comment. This gentleman had rheumatoid arthritis, quite severe, had gone through several knee replacements, but continued to have limiting back pain and joint pain. And he lived in an area of the country where the physicians were particularly reticent to prescribe long-acting pain medication. So he was undertreated and quite debilitated and very young. He was only in his 50s at the time. So his son-in-law actually brought him up to see me in consultation, and I was able to negotiate with his primary doctor that these medications could be prescribed safely. And watching this gentleman's functional status be returned, watching him return to the activities that he loved, go camping again, hunting, you know, be present with his grandkids, was really inspiring for everybody who was involved in his care. And he's never forgotten it. And now, almost 12 years later, he still is on exactly the same dose that he was 12 years ago, believe it or not, and is still profoundly grateful.
I can't think of a more appropriate use of an opioid analgesic. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Martha Twaddle, for helping us better understand the appropriate use of opioids. Dr. Twaddle, thank you.
Thank you, Porter. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Perspectives in Palliative Medicine on ReachMD XM160, the channel for medical professionals, with your host, Dr. Porter Story. To download this program, please visit www.reachmd.com or on ReachMD's free ReachMD medical radio iPhone app. Perspectives in Palliative Medicine is produced in cooperation with AAHPM, the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, and sponsored by King Pharmaceuticals, leaders in the field of pain management, and developers of a new educational initiative to improve the diagnosis and treatment of pain, Pain Balance. The King Pain Balance Educational Initiative includes a unique comprehensive website, www.painbalance.org, that offers a broad range of information and tools to help healthcare professionals and others better understand all aspects of pain, which by its very nature is difficult to assess, treat, and manage. Pain Balance offers the first convenient centralized online location for the resources and clinical tools healthcare professionals need to make informed decisions and provide the best possible care for their patients with chronic pain. The website, www.painbalance.org, also includes a narrative scenarios feature, which provides a case-based walkthrough navigation tool to highlight the full scope of the website's resources, including pain categories and guidelines, treatment options, and risk management tips, and clinician tools and resources. Also, an online newsletter will help keep healthcare professionals at the front of the latest research, advances in treatment, issues on the policy and reimbursement fronts, and other important news in the field of pain management. To learn more about the King Pharmaceuticals Pain Balance Educational Initiative, the high burden of undertreated chronic pain, and to preview the tools and resources available to healthcare professionals and others, visit www.painbalance.org.